It is a center for higher learning.
It is a place with centuries of secrets in its shadowed halls.
This is where you have come to learn the mysteries of the cosmos.
Welcome to the Miskatonic University Podcast.
They'll teach you things you can't unlearn.
Hello, and welcome to the Miskatonic University Podcast, episode 151. This is the podcast dedicated to Call of Cthulhu, another horror and Lovecraft-related role-playing games. I'm Keeper Dan.
I'm Keeper Chad. And this episode, we're going to be taking a look at the Ennie nominations.
I'm Keeper Murph, and then we'll get into some riffing with the random table of riffiness.
I'm Keeper John, and let's jump into this.
Miskatonic University Campus Crier.
Campus Crier's Miskatonic U student paper. Here's going to go through Mythos-related news and feedback for the show. This episode is being recorded on July 5th, 2018. First off, we would very much like to thank everyone who contributed to episode 150. The messages that we got, Mike, Oscar, Lynn, Badger, Ascarius Tabularis, our wonderful editing team, thank you. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, that was such a surprise, guys. Seriously, from the bottom of our hearts, we thank you.
That was amazing.
It was amazing and fantastic. I greatly appreciated it. It was such a surprise. It really was. And also, I want to say thank you to all of the listeners. I mean, you guys make it worthwhile for us to do this. So thank you so much.
Yeah, and I want to single out Sean in particular because both Max and Edwin said that he should get the bulk of the credit. So taking them at their word, thank you so much, Sean. I'm sure it was a Herculean effort to do all that. So thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it. It's I've been there. I know what that must have been like.
You do.
Going into more recent things. Ennies!
Yay.
And, yep, so here are the Ennie nominees that apply to our little sphere. Chaosium has a total of 8 nominations, and 5 of them are Call of Cthulhu products. Best Adventure, The Two-Headed Serpent.
The Best Art Cover for Down Darker Trails.
And for Best Monastery. No.
Really?
The Chaosium Monks.
Monastery?
No, I just started to read it and it felt like Monastery. It's Best Monster / Adversary, which, you know, a portmanteau would be Monastery.
I agree.
Best Monastery Award goes to Down Darker Trails.
Best production values go to the Grand Grimoire.
And best supplement for Reign of Terror.
Nice.
Nice job on the nominations.
Yeah.
Other nominees in the horror game realm, we've got Best Art Cover, Best Rules, Best Setting, Best Writing, and Product of the Year, all for Harlem Unbound Darker Hue Studios. Congratulations, Chris Spivey.
That's amazing.
I mean,
outstanding.
Unbelievable run right there.
And remember all the other recognition that Harlem Unbound has received lately.
Yeah. It's
so.
Yeah. Diana Jones
this
Award
is
nomination.
Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is going to be a big year for Chris Spivey and Darker Hue Studios.
For sure.
Mm hmm.
Also, Arc Dream got a bunch of nominations. Perhaps not surprising. It does, you know, the timing of this is. It makes me remember that all this stuff came out over the last year.
I know, right?
But
yeah.
They got Best Electronic Book is for Delta Green's A Night at the Opera. Best Adventure, they got a nomination also for Night at the Opera. Best Game, the whole Delta Green RPG gets a nomination. best production values, also the RPG. And for best writing, nomination goes to Delta Green, The Way It Went Down, which is Dennis Detwiller's book.
Nice.
Congratulations, guys. That's amazing.
Yep.
Yep.
Awesome.
There are other horror game nominations, which include Best Electronic Book for Hudson and Brand by Stygian Fox Publishing. The Best Rules for Cthulhu Confidential from Pelgrane Press. The authors are Robin D. Laws, Chris Spivey, and Ruth Tillman. Best Production Values for Bluebeard's Bride by Magpie Games.
Nice.
And Best Game, Red Markets, a game of economic horror for Hebanon Games. And the authors are Caleb Stokes, Laura Briskin Limehouse, and Ross Payton. Congrats to them for the nominations.
Totally. Good year for horror gaming.
For sure.
That's real. Yeah.
Bumper big, year, big, man. Big.
Yes. There have been a lot of really good and really creative out of the standard mold type of game products out there.
Were there any other nominations that we might be interested in?
No. There's one that, you know, might be of some kind of interest. We are nominated for Best Podcast.
Yeah, we are.
You know, for reasons we don't know, the Ken and Robin Talk About Stuff show is not part of the running this year.
Craziness.
Yeah. So now gold can be gold, and silver is silver again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Otherwise, you're just gold behind Ken and Robin.
They did win, what is it, 5 years in a row?
Yeah.
Since the first year they were on, they just dominated. Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Which...
Because, and I can't fault that.
Yeah.
I listen to them every week. They're
great.
Yeah,
no, they're legends, dude, especially at this format. They've come across really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Voting for the Innies starts on July 11th, and the winners are going to be announced at the awards ceremony at Gen Con on August 3rd. This episode airs right in the middle of that voting window. So we'll have a link to the voting in the show notes in very, very large and boldened, maybe even italicized font.
Yes. Yes, it will have many faces.
And it'll be in the social media feeds and all that.
Because we want you to vote. Everyone should vote. Yeah. Go out and vote. Vote 2018 MUP.
There you go.
And what we want to say is that you should go and vote for your favorite podcast, and you should also go and vote for all your favorite products. And of course, we favor the horror products. And of course, we would like to have votes come our way. But let's just rock the vote and go out there and make a showing.
Yeah.
Hear, hear.
And we love you. And so, we've had some news from the Stygian Fox, publisher of Gaming Stuff. Stephanie McClay wrote on the publisher's Facebook page that frequent editor Jeff Moeller will be moving on to work on other projects. And after a series of effusive thank yous, she said, "We feel that Jeff and I have kind of run our course in terms of joint projects." But before that, comments on the Kickstarter page for Fear of Sharp Little Needles were initially kind of tense and suggested a split might not have been on such good terms. But the backers for Fear Sharp Little Needles have received a version of the book in PDF for review, and proof copies are on their way back from the printer.
So that's something, at least, I guess. At least they're delivering, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the main thing. They're delivering. They can work out their own, you know, working together. That's their own business.
Seems like things are chugging along.
Yep.
Yeah. That's good.
At the time of this recording, Tales of Valor and Terror, the Cthulhu scenario collection from Golden Goblin Press that's paired up with a feline horror fiction collection, it's past the $9,000 mark, and it's on its way to its $12,500 goal, with 148 backers so far, or at the time of this recording, and many days left to go. This looks on pace to fund and overshoot and reach some of the stretch goals, which include extra art, bookmarks, stickers, and extra fiction stories. So that's cool. By the way, 60 Stone Press is offering a coupon to backers, for backers above the $1 level for 25% off of the purchase of the rules for Cthulhu Velvet Paws on Cthulhu's Trail. Oh, that's great. So you can get it.
Oh, yeah, that's
you're
nice.
Get a discount if, back above a dollar. Yeah. And, so you're kind of in the project. If you don't have the core rules yet, get
if
them.
You don't already have it. Because I don't. I don't have a copy of Cthulhu.
I do not either.
So that's a very nice way of doing
that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice work, 60 Stone.
YSDC has relaunched its long-standing newsletter after purging 18,000 email addresses. I read that right. 18,000 email addresses.
That's correct.
The new one is going to be called Yogg-Sothothery. It'll come out monthly-ish. And you can sign up on the site. We'll have a link to the YSDC blog that has instructions for how to subscribe. And they are also giving away a copy of Fall of Delta Green to one subscriber. Gotta go sign up again now.
Nice.
One of the 18,000.
One of the 18,000. My gosh, man.
Oh, speaking of Fall of Delta Green. Now, this one I needed to ask you guys, have we covered just like it being out?
I don't know that we have.
Not yet. No, we have not yet.
Okay, so it's now available in PDF. The Fall of Delta Green is Pelgrane Press's adaptation of Arc Dream's Delta Green RPG to Pelgrane's Gumshoe system. That's Kenneth Heitz's deal. He has ported it over to the Gumshoe system. In its own little thing. It takes place in the 1960s. It leads up to the official dissolution of the organization at the end of the decade, and then it follows the fateful events in the jungles of Indochina. And so there's a sampler available, as well as free downloadable character and handler sheets on Pelgrane's website right now, along with a development diary by Ken and a spotlight on ghouls in the Fall of Delta Green.
Very cool.
Yeah, that sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get myself that sampler. And very neat. Then next up, Sirenscape has released part one of their sound pack for Masks of Nyarlathotep. And that is the brand new prequel Peru chapter.
Nice.
Very cool.
And there's a YouTube video that actually I watched earlier today that the man who runs Sirenscape went through some of the sample stuff, and there's a lot of great ambient background noises. There are buttons for specific events, creatures, animals, people, stuff like that. So yeah, a keeper with this thing at the table can make some very cool immersive background.
I love this. I love that they're going to be laying the groundwork for, like, you could, do all kinds of South American scenarios using this, or, this support will have reverberations in other products.
Mm-hmm. I would consider it, except for whenever I eventually get around to running it, it'll probably be recorded, which means that the sound effects would be part of that, and I don't think that's really kosher with their usage, so my group will have to not have that.
That's cool. The downside of doing actual plays for our groups is that you can't record some of the cool sound stuff that comes out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a reminder. No, I'm not.
What?
Just a reminder that Chaosium encourages you to record broadcast your Call of Cthulhu materials.
Oh my gosh, you should not have done that.
No, I shouldn't.
Okay, should we cover the elephant in the room then, in case anyone doesn't know?
Yeah, go ahead. Sure, go ahead, Murph. I toss that to you.
All right, so over the weekend.
Over to our correspondent in Texas.
Over the weekend, there was a tweet that went out from Todd at Chaosium that essentially claimed that all actual plays were a violation of copyright for the rights on the scenarios themselves, and that Chaosium was the rights holder for it, et cetera, et cetera. Twitter went alive with activity there for a few hours. until Chaosium clarified the situation and said that that is not the fact. Please continue to make live plays.
Wow. Say that again. It started from someone inside Chaosium saying that, and then Chaosium came back and...
Yes.
And went, don't listen to that guy.
Okay. That's apparently what happened. Yeah. It was really kind of strange. I watched it happen and was in the midst of starting a flame war, when the redaction came through. so it was quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was fielding questions. Because, I
mean, nobody's disputing that Chaosium owns the rights to these scenarios.
Well, that wasn't... No. No. Should we go back and read the...
We can if you want. I mean, let me pull it up. If we're going to go into it, we may as well do it right. Here we go. The original tweet was deleted, for the record. Okay? This happened on July 1st. All we have is Chaosium's reply. Okay? It says, quote, "Please note, our team member was mistaken. Permission is not, in all caps, required to make/share recordings of Call of Cthulhu or any other Chaosium live/actual play, nor has it ever been. If you tell us about your show, we might share what you're doing, but you don't need to ask us first."
Excellent. Very clear and well done.
And that the original tweet that caused the issue has been pulled down. That is no longer there. It is gone. But yeah, essentially that was that. And then Chaosium came back just a matter of hours later saying, "Nope, you don't have to ask permission. You're good."
Yeah, that's the main thing that matters.
Yes.
That they clarified it, you know, right away. So yay.
Yep. Yay.
Because otherwise, boy, that was going to wind up being a mess.
Oh, yeah, dude. That was going to impact all of us. Because we've all done it. I've got several hundred hours of audio volume up there for massive gnarly stuff. Yeah, I can't imagine how much fun that would be to try to get off YouTube.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, and hearing the story played out definitely does not discourage buying it.
No.
Oh, yeah. No,
I think it absolutely, and does the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it is a sticky, weird thing, because it's not like if you want to put on a play publicly that you have to pay royalties, right? So it's kind of, you know, in a way, it's the same. It's a script for an improvisational theater session, so it's, you know, I get where someone would make that assumption.
I do too, but
it could be interpreted
that way.
I think they might even have the legal right to do that.
Well, we should make note also that Chaosium replied as well with what looks like a snippet out of their FAQ, right, on their website. It's posted into the Twitter chain as well. It someone essentially asked, "Do you have a problem with broadcasting games over Twitch, et cetera, YouTube, you know, whatever it may be." And essentially it was, are there some creative activities that don't come under the fan materials policy or licensing guidelines? And the answer was such things as product reviews, commentary, criticism, and news reporting about our products are already covered under the general provisions of fair use. A license is not necessary to make and broadcast live/recorded play sessions, ergo Twitch TV, YouTube, podcasts, etc.
Oh, and that's interesting. They're calling that fair use.
They are calling that fair use, which is a whole different gamut. So.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I definitely say good on them.
It is. I'm glad they nipped it in the butt as quickly as they did.
That could be interpreted very different.
Yes. I'm happy that they killed it as quickly as they did. Even though some people were getting real nervous there real quick. But you got to remember, this is the interwebs.
Yeah.
And, you know, things happen quickly and escalate even quicker.
I feel like we've all learned a little something here today. if you're concerned about what you're about to put on social media, get a second pair of eyes on that.
Sure.
For sure.
Get somebody else to read it.
Just take a 20-minute break and come back and reread that and see if you still agree with it.
Go ahead.
Here's a terrible segue to a new video blog series that Mike Mason and Lynn Hardy are doing on the Masks of Nyarlathotep reimagination, and it's a rebirth with 7th edition. And we have a link in the show notes to to their first. It's almost like a blooper reel almost, but it's a funny little blooper reel as they're starting to get comfortable before the camera and talk about bringing back masks. So check that out.
Hi. is it still running?
Yeah, we'll just leave it running.
This is them just laughing and saying hello.
Hi, I'm Mike Mason from Kate. Is that again? Right, yeah. Okay, this time.
You can tell they're professionals.
Waving me face, what?
Got beard issue, but it's all
right now. Beard issue? Right.
You got beard issues.
He's got beard issues.
That's what somebody... You've got beard issues. Mike, your beard is magical.
It's not just us.
No.
It's definitely not just us. But in a perfect segue from one to the other, Mask of Nyarlathotep for 7th edition has been released in PDF.
It is in the wild!
You can get it right now. It's not got a print release date set yet, but you can go and get it on drive-through and some of the other places in PDF format.
Yeah,
and it is fantastic. Just saying, and
even the PDF version weighs about 6 pounds.
It's a really heavy PDF, shouldn't forget about the HPLHS masks item. They still have the Dark Adventure Radio Theater for Mask of Nyarlathotep, which is on sale now for $69.95. Unfortunately, their deluxe and limited edition sets of that same have sold out already. So if you're listening to this, there's a good chance the regular one is sold out too. So just get ready. The gamer prop set though is still available, for $95.99.
Yeah, that's actually on pre-order for $95.
Yeah, you're right. It's pre-order for $95.
They're expecting that to go up fairly dramatically whenever it releases. August 1st is what they're expecting.
And
I pulled the trigger.
Did you really?
Oh, you did, dude. Oh. Damn.
So you're going to make copies of everything and send it to all three of us?
Wait a minute, illegal. Stop it, man. Penalty box, 2 minutes.
I'm just messing with him. We all know he wouldn't do that for us.
I'm not recreating physical props.
Come on.
But yeah, I'm going to be getting a big box of stuff from HPLHS later.
That's freaking awesome, man. I'm so...
Because so I am planning.
Guiltily.
Oh,
just wishing
you're planning?
$100.
Wait. Continue?
I am currently running Two-Headed Serpent for my local group, and I am figuring out how that then flows into masks.
Hey, that's a cool idea.
Nice. Are you gonna run masks as pulp?
Absolutely. I'm going from Two-Headed Serpent.
Well, exactly.
It's already pulp.
All right.
So any surviving characters, they can just move straight on in.
Good call.
And I have been reading through the Peru chapter, which takes place roughly 4 years before the events of Masks. And that one, I'm looking at ways to adapt that into the midst of Two-Headed Serpent.
Ooh, I like it.
Very cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's some work that has been done, because Masks takes place like a decade before Serpent does.
Are you going to be recording your mask sessions?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm recording Two-Headed Serpent.
Oh, sweet. I want to hear those whenever you get them done.
Yeah. Those will take some editing because, you know, we're playing at a friend's house and he has family to walk through the living room and stuff like that. So that's going to take some editing to actually get that clean and listenable. But I have been recording.
Fantastic.
Do you want me to send you sound effects things for the family when they walk through? They can do little you know, little Foley stuff during the game.
Yep, we could.
No, I was looking at editing them out, actually, not enhancing them.
Oh, that's a shame.
I was really hoping.
They come into the room clapping two coconut shells together.
Yeah, yes, we could send the wooden cricket out that Chad loves to use. We could send that out or the little music box.
I've got a door creaker.
Yeah.
Oh, and another door opens. I don't know why.
What is this? Oh, random child just walks in. Why is the six-year-old standing in the middle of Jackson Elias's murder scene? We don't know.
But he's pulling a bow across a
spoilers.
Saw.
Yeah. Oh, I would play that game. That sounds awesome.
It's fantastic.
So, yeah, I have been looking through the new masks. I'm really enjoying it. I like it very, very much, and the new chapter is very cool. It just, since I'm approaching it from a little different angle, it's a little more interesting to try and figure out how to make it work there. But I really like how they, you know, came out with the new version.
Cool. I guess I'm kind of a masks skeptic, and I'm going to say that now, but I haven't done a thorough deep dive, but I'm going to say this. I got to page 22, and I did see a paragraph about sexism and racism in masks, and what to do. They talk about how you can set a dial, basically, on how much you want to push that forward. Because I think masks has a little bit of a colonialism problem. And so my main thesis here, or my main direction, is to check out masks to see how they have gone through and sort of updated to this century, sensibilities about brown people in various countries where the original masks was not sensitive. And, so that's my main bag. But what I'm hearing on Good Friends of Jackson Elias is sounding encouraging, that they have thought about this. Mm-hmm. And that paragraph flags for me that some work has been done. So that's, I hate to take it out of the like super fun happy hour talk, but I wanted to mention that. I really want to take a deep dive and see how they've done this. Because I think it would have been a challenge.
There were issues, and they have been addressed. Now we just got to see exactly what they did to do that.
Exactly.
One thing that I wasn't expecting, but I was like, oh, okay. Jackson Elias is now African-American.
Oh, interesting. I didn't catch that.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm not that far, yeah.
The only place you see it is when you find his character portrait.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Huh.
But otherwise, there's nothing different about him. It's just... His character portrait. Oh, okay. I like the way they did the art. They made him very likable looking, which he needs to be.
Yeah, because you gotta be your main motivation.
Yeah, you gotta care enough about the guy in order to avenge his murder.
Like nine times over.
Later. That's the Peru chapter. It's all about getting to know him and getting some time to know the character. And so that's why I'm trying to figure out ways to work that into Two-Headed Serpent, so that way I can have things, you know, work as smoothly as I can.
Sounds cool, man.
That's not a spoiler. Jackson Elias might actually survive the entire campaign. We don't know. It's not clear.
Mass in and of itself, the entire campaign is actually a booger. And at the end, he comes out of the shower.
Out of the shower.
Yeah.
Dallas reference. Yes. Yes.
Dallas is my jam.
Talk about sexism and misogyny in the last century.
Oh, dude, it's like a pageant of horrible humanity. Yep.
Let's go to detention. So, we're going to head back into the whispering cubicles of the listening room in the old Orin library.
Welcome to the listening room. Rewind your reels and enjoy your selections in silence.
So, sharpen your number two pencils and sit up straight. Mr. Tyler is about to take us all to reform school.
Oh, you're so witty.
All right, that's enough of that. Take your seats. I bet you felt pretty clever when you handed in your creative writing assignment today. Miss Whately gave you the assignment to describe an animal you wrote, quote, "They were not altogether crows, nor moles, nor buzzards, nor ants, nor vampire bats, nor decomposed beings, but something I cannot and must not recall." That's just lazy writing. Tell us what it is instead of what it isn't next time, and you won't end up in detention. Today, I want to continue our examination of the 1939 Boris Karloff horror movie, The Ghoul. Last time, I synopsized the absolutely perfect first 18 minutes of this movie, which set up the story of a dying Egyptologist named Professor Moreland, who plans to be buried with a precious jewel called the Eternal Light, which he hopes to offer to Anubis after his death in exchange for immortality. Unfortunately, those 18 minutes are followed by an absolutely mediocre hour of hijinks and bad writing and attempts at comic relief. So today we're going to throw all of that out, and we are going to build a Call of Cthulhu scenario that follows the glorious first 18 minutes of The Ghoul. Obviously, the title of the movie is The Ghoul, so that kind of tells us what direction we should really be heading into. And I think we'll all be really, really disappointed if Professor Moreland doesn't come back to life as some sort of terrible specter seeking vengeance. That just seems like a misstep if we didn't play around with that. So let's start with ghouls. Fortunately for our purposes, we have a really easy trail to follow. Professor Moreland has a gigantic statue of Anubis in his bedroom as he lays dying. And he refers to Anubis by the name Opener of the Ways. Now, those of you well-versed in the Cthulhu mythos will know Opener of the Ways is a name for Yog-Sothoth. However, in Egyptian mythology, this refers to Wep-Wawet, a wolf-headed god of war who eventually was downgraded to become an aspect of the jackal-headed god Anubis. So there's our connection to the ghouls of ancient Egypt. We just have to figure out what the Eternal Light is then. What if the ghouls of ancient Egypt followed a sorcerer priest they deified as Wep-Wawet, Opener of the Ways? In other words, the one who led them through different dimensions, through the dreamlands, the waking world, to feast on the carrion of battle. The ghouls tired of Wep-Wawet's tyranny and locked away his consciousness inside of a jewel, the Eternal Light, bringing about the half-remembered legends that if you give it to Anubis, he will grant you immortality. If someone dies with that gem in their hand, that alien intelligence begins to seep into the empty vessel of the dead body, bringing Wep-Wawet back to life. Unfortunately, or rather fortunately, the untrustworthy servant Lang stole the Eternal Light from Moreland's hand before the process could finish, which means by the light of the full moon, Moreland will rise as an animalistic, clever, but crazy half-ghoul that is instinctively and ravenously searching his property for the lost jewel, which will complete the resurrection of Wep-Wawet. Meanwhile, the servant Lang tries to make quick money in London by selling the gem before he gets caught, but that's not all he has to worry about. Remember, the movie starts off with a cult member trying to track down where the Eternal Light has ended up after it's been robbed from a tomb. So we get to have a cult of ghouls too, trying to reclaim this gem before Wep-Wawet returns and silence anybody who knows what's going on. And of course, their investigation trying to find Lang and recover the Eternal Light runs completely parallel with what the player characters are up to. And undoubtedly, the Eternal Light is absolutely necessary to put Moreland to rest. This being London in the 1830s, I'm of course envisioning this as a Bookhounds of London adventure. As an Egyptologist, Moreland probably has a whole bunch of important books and papers, which will either go to some sort of educational institution or might be sold off to a bookhound. If the investigators are shady or have some connections with the underworld or law enforcement, Moreland's crooked lawyer, Broughton, could be the one that brings them in the hope of recovering this priceless gem before the inheritors find out about its existence. From there, the investigators dig through the professor's papers, look through his mansion and hopefully avoid being attacked by him, find Lang and recover the Eternal Light before he's found by the Cult of Ghouls, survive encounter with said Cult of Ghouls, and use the Eternal Light to drive back Wep-Wawet for eternity. Boy, do I wish that's what this movie had been about in the first place. Well, that's it for your detention. Stay out of trouble.
He does such a good job.
I just like hearing him say whip wop.
I would totally watch that movie.
Or play the scenario.
Yeah, if nothing else, I need to watch the original just to see these first 18 minutes of the
right.
Yeah, I did take a look. I didn't watch the whole 18 minutes, but I watched a few minutes, and it is atmospheric. It's really promising.
But as he described, more than just a movie, I think that would be a fantastic scenario.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Totally. So once again, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I just love the intro there. The
lazy
writing. Just tell us what it is instead of what it isn't.
Yeah.
That's great.
Oh, that's so good.
Chad's dying. Okay. So
once again, if you have any interest in producing a segment for the podcast, please contact us at mup.feedback@gmail.com.
And now we have some audio feedback that we have. All right.
It's almost a palindrome.
We've got one here from our buddy Canageek.
Salutations. Canageek here. I just listened to your episode with Lynn Hardy and noted the point she made about people with grandkids entering the hobby. While I've never seen a grandkid at the gaming table, my current group is now roughly split between my dad's original gaming group and the children of said members. And the interesting thing about that is none of the children were born when they started playing together. And I'm now the second youngest at 30 and the first member of the gaming group just had their grandkid born by another member of the gaming group. So give us 10-15 years and we'll probably have a grandkid in the gaming group. So yes, I still refuse to endorse frivolous sports in a serious academic research institution, but have a nice day.
So good.
You know, the debate team is still the cephalopods.
That's true. That's true. And the chess team.
That's true. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Good point. You can still go pods. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be the people bumping into each other. It's, you know, it could also be, you know, intellectual pursuits in a team environment.
In fact, that character in the logo that's wearing a leather helmet might be just a fashion statement of one of the debate team. That could be a debate team member. Yeah.
It could be an intimidation tactic against the other, you know, debaters.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Or he's just clumsy. Thank you so much, Canna Geek. And that sounds like a pretty amazing gaming group having that kind of history together.
Oh my God.
I love that. And now we have Cthulhu Bob.
Hello, this is Cthulhu Bob Lovely in Missoula, Montana. I have just recently begun listening to gaming podcasts, and I started with Keeper Murph and the Assholes playing Masks of Nyarlathotep, which, by the way, is fantastic.
Oh God, I'm sorry.
You guys have entertained me. You've made me laugh so hard I couldn't breathe, and I really hope you've done more stuff. I'm going to hunt around for you. And if you haven't, please do so. I would love to hear more from Keeper Murph and the Assholes. Thank you very much. This is Cthulhu Bob Lovely, Missoula, Montana, signing off.
Man.
Oh, that's awesome.
Thank you so much.
That is awesome. But right now, I just want to pitch a podcast between that guy and Murph. Those two voices, man. Oh, you've got the pipes. Well done, Bob.
That was fantastic.
Called How Low Can the Decibels Go?
Yeah.
Well, they can go pretty low.
Welcome, Cthulhu Bob Lovely. It is it's wonderful to have a new listener.
Totally.
Thank you so much for calling in and letting us know you're out there.
For sure. That's really cool. We really appreciate it a lot.
And Murph, it's on to you and your troop of assholes to make more content for Cthulhu Bob.
Yeah, it's time, man. You keep gaming and you keep not recording. So I'm just disclosing that for all of the listeners.
Oh, shit. Damn it.
There's been like years and years of gaming, same people not pressing record. They just forget every time.
It's not entirely true. We do record some. We're just not doing, right now we're doing Curse of Strahd with D&D 5th edition.
Which people would listen to, man. Like, I mean, yeah, also that's like horror adjacent.
I will admit that that has been recorded, to the best of my knowledge, the entire thing.
Oh, the whole thing?
Yeah.
Well, we should play it, right? Dan, what do you think? No?
Yeah.
Not?
that was very reticent from Dan. We can put that in feed.
Yeah. Yeah, you should maybe think about doing that. Okay, well, never mind. All right. Get back to Cthulhu.
Yeah.
God. Run Masks again. There's a new edition out, I hear.
Yeah. Yes, that is on the horizon, I do believe. I think
you
should
start in... Yeah, you should start where you left off.
With using pulp rules, trying to get everybody back in like they were beforehand. We got a couple of new members in the Assholes nowadays.
Well, like, totally scrap those characters, like it's a totally different timeline, but just start in Egypt or wherever you were.
We've done this so many times that,
you have?
Like that scenario where we have had to scrap all of the characters and start where we were. That,
right.
That was part of the problem and part of the reason why we stopped.
Double your hit points and go pulp.
Yeah, I think that we might restart and go pulp. That might be a good idea.
Have some mentalist powers and stuff.
Yeah, I think pulp, I you know, we've said this from the beginning, but I think pulp is the way to go with Masks. You really can't go wrong there.
I have to agree.
It's pulpy.
It's all better with the death ray.
Yeah, it's all better with the death ray. It's so pulpy in general, and I really think that it's going to play out really, really well with pulp rules.
And we've got some written feedback. We've got Farkar. Please correct us with maybe a pronunciation guide for your name so we can get it right. But thank you for writing. He says... Just listen to your 150th episode. Congrats! Thank you. Catching up from the many I've missed due to life stuff. Great job for all the memories I've heard before and haven't yet. As always, you've done an amazing job and drive me to make my Savage Worlds ETU games better and always keep me entertained while assembling and painting minis or props. Still hoping for the Fighting Cephalopods car decals. Oh, it's that guy. GoPods.
That's the guy.
Able to be back again on Patreon. Oh, well, thank you. That is very generous.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that and all of our amazing Patreon backers.
We love you. Thank you.
Up next, we have an email from Daniel Carroll, one of our semi-regular contributors, actually. He emails quite a bit. Congratulations on your Sasquatch Centennial. It's a Sesquicentennial, but we won't go into that. This was a really enjoyable clip show, which gave me many a chuckle. It seems that insert deity here may have been sending their congrats also. As while I was listening in the car, I happened to pass this truck, and he has an image here of him on a highway with a 1-800-GO-PODS truck had passed him at the same time.
The image will be in the show notes.
So he grabbed a pun image 1-800 of it, which is...
1-800-GO-PODS. I wish.
It is fantastic.
We could... I wish
I
we could
this might
make
be
that,
the show
that,
image.
We could like have that as our phone line, but we cannot.
That's pretty cool, though. You have to admit, 1-800-GO-PODS right there. And how often would you see those and we just don't think of it, you know?
Yeah, it's not an uncommon company to see. Those things are all over the place.
For real. Thank you, Daniel. We really appreciate it.
And now we can finally move into the main topic.
Settle down now, Klaus. It's time
for
your next lesson.
Riff, show riff ideas. We've done this before. We've got a D10 ready. Who's rolling?
Who's wrangling these cats? What are we doing here?
All right, so this is past riff ideas that we've had. We've done them before in some cases, and there's 10 of them. And so we've got a list here. We're going to roll the die, and we're just going to go with one. We've already done all the Annie's thing. We've done a long show already, so...
Yeah, this needs to be quick.
Just do one. Don't do, like, four with each person having one. And And we'll roll again if we don't like what we get. This isn't a sentence.
All right.
Yep.
I have a D10 in hand.
I'm holding my metal call of Cthulhu. You have one? D10.
Go for it.
And it is a 4.
Turn a bad movie into a good scenario seed. Yeah. That's exactly what Mr. Tyler just did.
We're not going to be able to live up to that. So I think we should roll again.
We should re-roll.
We should roll.
No, screw that, man. No, screw that. Shut your yappy mouths. No.
All right, let's decide.
Yeah,
okay.
True.
So let's do it.
We're not going to do the ghoul. Yeah,
so
I mean, let's pick another
movie then. You know, agreeing on a film together.
I think, Dan, you should choose a bad film.
Okay.
But choose a bad one. Not
I watched, my daughter forced me to watch last night, was Baby Mama.
I know nothing about this movie, so no.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just saying it's rife for a horror and mythos plot hooks all in there. It's just a terrible movie.
Do you guys remember a movie called Warriors of Virtue, which had a life-size anthropomorphic kangaroo warriors?
Oh my gosh, that sounds fantastic.
Barring alternatives, we could just watch the trailer right now. I have it up.
Do you really?
I'd rather get one from Dan, because I think, but whatever, you know.
You know, one that I don't actually consider to be bad was Horror Express. I think that actually is absolutely made to be a scenario.
Is that the one with Tom Hanks and there's a train and it's kind of animated, but it's there's a lot of snow.
Polar Express.
Oh, the Polar Express, obviously, right.
What about Hobgoblins?
The Gremlins ripoff?
That? It was the the Gremlins ripoff.
Oh, I forgot about that. All right, let's find a trailer, because I don't remember anything about it. Should we do trailers and do it that way?
That was an MST3K episode. Oh, so painful.
Yeah, it was, exactly.
Oh, it was, okay.
And I remember reading an interview about him doing that one. He said, if you have any idea how horrible it was to watch that movie multiple times within the same week, it easily was the top 3 hated movies of the guy who did Mystery Science Theater. And he watched a lot of bad movies.
Yeah, that was a Joel Sci-Fi Channel episode. No, that's Riff Tracks.
Yeah.
Oh, a new one.
Mike and the Bots, old but it was an older one, and it has had a sequel.
I have a link.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is boggling. I think the sequel actually came out after Mystery Science Theater one did, if I remember.
Part of the MST episode is actually in the trailer for the sequel.
Oh, that's crazy, crazy meta, horrible.
Uh-huh.
So there is the link. If you want, I will cue it up and hit play.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. Wow.
Okay.
So bad.
I'm fully invested. That's I'm fully so invested. Bad. You had me at poorly constructed puppets. So.
Your John puppet outweighed these by a long shot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
That was a two-dimensional,
Yes. I'm fully aware.
Full core board, way better than this.
So, I got questions. I got follow-up questions. Has anybody seen the full movie?
Yeah.
With the commentary you have?
Yeah.
No. So, what is going on in the vault?
The goblins were simply locked in there by that old guy, generations ago, that... They arrived in a spaceship.
And he owned a bank?
Yeah.
When this guy was young, a teeny little round flying saucer, and they were running havoc all over the studio lot, because for some reason it takes place in a film studio. And
for some reason.
For some reason.
And that guy, in his own story, managed to be the hero by locking them all away in there. And that one idiot just opened the door for the hell of it.
So that guy locks him in there and then spends the rest of his life guarding that door.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. For some moronic teenager to come through and just open it on a whim.
Yep.
All right. Let's work this, guys. Yep. I think we can doctor this. So, we need a better motivation for sitting in front of a door for your entire life.
Yeah.
I think the motivation is there with knowing that some horrible thing is in there.
I mean, if it was like a Shoggoth on the other side, then, I mean, yeah, you're like, you got somebody who's like, no, for as long as I can, I need to make sure that this thing stays tucked away, because I can't kill it, but I can at least imprison it.
All right,
but Shoggoths are too easy, though. We need some sort of miniature mutant ghouls.
Yeah, I got a pitch.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It doesn't. We can have multiples, but I only saw the trailer, so I am thinking that these are actually puppets.
Okay.
That are made for some old production on the film lot, but the puppets themselves are possessed, and once the vault is opened, that they call puppeteers, and that's like when you saw the puppet running down the bar as if someone's just like bouncing their hand along, that's like there's actually someone holding the puppet, so that instead of trying to make these things into monsters, these are actually
there's some poor schmuck fleshy. That is like brain dead, but it being controlled by the thing on his hand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's the puppet and who's the puppeteer? It's very philosophical.
You be my central spinal column.
They could be be trophies.
Yeah.
They could be no. I hear groaning. Who's groaning?
I got nothing. I got nothing. This is just bad. I got nothing.
Yeah, so like these are trophies of aliens. Okay, so they arrive in the spaceship just as in the film, but it crashes and the actual pilots die. They're kind of squishy. But they have in their ship these trophies of this other species. They have like the skins, the pelts, and the heads of these other species. And those become the puppets that possess.
They wind up being made into puppets by somebody at this film studio that needs
who quick assumes props they're puppets. For
a production.
Yes. Big budget cuts.
Okay.
Can't spend any more money on this film. It was actually going to be a romantic comedy, but then they just had to pivot. And figured, well, horror movies are doing okay. Let's just pivot and make this into a horror movie. So they get a script doctor who's like somebody's cousin, and they revamp the whole thing around these pelts, these alien pelts. But the problem is that the alien pelts, just like in that story, the museum? Is that what it's called?
I'm not sure what.
Anyway, that where
Chad,
the...
Chad, I think you're getting lost.
I am? Just like in life?
I think you're getting too deep into this.
Okay. Well, I'm trying to work it.
Yeah.
Somebody help me. Take the ball. It's deflating.
All right. How is this... Let's turn this into a scenario as opposed to a better movie.
Oh, I was there. I was just going to be a scenario, but okay.
Oh, is it? Okay. All right. I thought you were building a movie. I'm like, well, let's build a scenario.
Well, I was thinking that the scenario would be on a movie set that the people.
Okay. All right.
Are
so your player characters are
filmmakers. Yeah. They're sound designers. They're makeup artists. They're
actors. Okay.
Yeah, poorly and paid. That lends itself towards a automatic, like, convention scenario, because then you can just have pre-gens that are already in those jobs.
Okay.
Yes. Yep, that's true. You also have a pretty good kind of spirit gum to keep people together.
Mm-hmm.
Relatively.
Okay. So we've got what's the time period? What's the setting for this?
Well, when was that filmed? I was thinking like 70s or 80s.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
No cell phones.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yep. 70s. I like the 70s. There's no cell phones. There's no personal computers.
You can do that.
You know, special effects are still
in camera.
actual, practical. You know, yep. Makeup and construction versus computer effects. So, okay.
Yeah.
Couldn't we do that in the early 80s too? Just
yeah, sure.
Or do you just prefer the hair in the 70s?
I like the hair and the shoes. I think I like the collars. Shoes and the collars, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, this level of bad movie, I was always available. You know, so like the 70s was kind of early for the real explosion of
right,
horror.
Right. And depending upon, if this is a convention scenario, you know, you personalize it. So depending upon your players or, you know, the age group and whatnot, you know, the type of movie being made is malleable. So it could be a 70s porn.
Oh, Lordy.
It could be a 70s blaxploitation.
Wow, yes. Uh-huh.
It could be a reefer movie, right? So got a lot of different ways you can take this in the 70s.
So they're filming, I mean, correct me or take me off, but, you know, they're filming one thing and then the budget gets cut and they don't know what to do. And
right.
So
what if the alien is, you know, I find the thought of this guy who is guarding the door for, you know, 40 years, thin, right? So what if, you know, something was stored in there and nobody even knew that it was an alien presence, right? And it's been stored in this prop room and it's been in there for 40 years and then something happens and now, you know, this prop, which is, you know, the size of a Frisbee or something, right? It's actually the spaceship and the occupants inside, the nearly microscopic occupants on the inside of that spaceship are awakened 40 years later. And then they start kind of coming out of their ship and start, you know, they have a, you know, extraterrestrial biology and they start interfacing with the materials that are in the storeroom. And then they start animating these bizarre, you know, they start merging, you know, furs and puppetry parts and stuff, and they start making animated puppets that kind of start coming out to attack.
All right. So they sort of they're cobbling together props that were from a movie, horror props perhaps, that become animated. Oh,
yeah.
I mean, prosthetic effects, like, you know, someone's disgorged throat, you know, I mean, that would be pretty cool to actually have the latex wounds and whatnot.
Right. I mean, also it could be everything. So, you know, it could escalate as the scenario is continued to be played. You know, so it starts off with things like these puppetry and, you know, hand puppets that are being animated. But then it, you know, moves on to, you know, latex rubber arms that are crawling across the floor, or it animates, you know, prop weapons, and then maybe eventually merges over to actual weapons, right? So you've got, you know, an axe that's bouncing across the floor as it's coming, you know, it's chasing you, right? The axe is all by itself, this animated axe is chasing after you, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or like a string of fake latex intestines, like a little snake kind of.
Yep.
Chasing
someone. Yep.
So we've got the monster, but like what does the monster want, and why are the investigators, is it just a survival horror? I guess it could be.
I think they've been locked into that damn you know, they've been locked into that vault for 60 something years, so I mean, maybe they're just pissed off.
Yeah, they're just throwing a fit.
Like, man, you locked us in. Maybe they're just after the old guy.
Oh, there we go. That's nice and specific.
It's very specific. But he died. See, I mean, he dies of a heart attack early on, so no one knows how to get him recontained, and they just go on havoc.
But But they want to find him in his grave. He's buried on the lot somewhere. Mr. Props Master.
He's been killed and buried all within the span of the scenario.
Oh, well, right. Yes, correct.
He could.
All right, well, you're right.
Actually, bad. He could have all... maybe his death is what kind of initiated this stuff, because he was the only guy that was kind of keeping people away from the...
Oh, yeah. Starts with a funeral. Starts with the... and the filmmakers are attending this funeral of this props master.
Okay.
And he had some weird stuff in the will.
Yeah. And our PCs are taking over the job now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they have... right. And it's like on time. You got stuff to do. Oh, I like this. So this is something I've talked about with Nick, who was on the show once. What is it called? Grace Under Pressure does a great job of giving people jobs at the very beginning of the scenario. Like, you're on an expedition team and you got to go and take these readings and you make these roles to do these, and it just gets you involved really quickly. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, you've got a director barking at you, and you've got, after this funeral, you've got stuff to do, and you're under the gun, and you got to find the stuff. And this props master was, you know, like, knew where everything was, and nobody knows where everything is now. So, you know, go spot hidden to find the prosthetic that we need for this scene, or, you know, set up the lights for, you know, just actually have filmmaking business to do, perhaps.
Yeah.
No, I like that. And maybe there is a solution available in the props room because of all the crap that's in there, to include maybe some... stones that have a radioactive signature that is, you know, harmless to humans, but is lethal to them, or at least is, it puts the aliens into a forced coma or something, you know. So maybe that stone had been stored near or sitting right on top of their spaceship, their tiny frisbee shaped, frisbee sized spaceship for 40 years. And that's what's kept them, you know, inert for so long. And so now, you know, it's got to be, there's investigation available, you know, to try and put two and two together by figuring out all that inside the prop room. And then you've got to find a way to gather the aliens back into a single space close enough to that mineral to put them back to sleep.
And like many horror movies, like, there's something that they're drawn to. So maybe finding what the bait is to get them together might be.
Blood.
Well, then it's everywhere, though. Or maybe it's Karo syrup. Maybe it's fake blood.
Yes, it's stage blood.
Karo syrup.
There's something in the stage blood. Let's see. But why would they... I was thinking, like, Uncle Props Master... maybe put something in the stage blood.
And maybe the aliens themselves don't even realize that if they eventually infect an actual living human, that they'll, you know, that their species will experience some sort of evolution and take them to the next step higher. And, you know, and maybe, you know, there's a culmination in the scenario where that occurs. And now they're able to communicate with us and tell us what their demands are, which will be evil, of course. They will always have evil demands.
I feel like maybe they could infect the producers, who would be the evil, the people in charge of the film.
Sure, or craft services.
Yeah, see, if it's producers, no one would notice. So that's
true.
You know, a good way for it to be, you know, under the radar.
Well, that'd be fun to write, though, to have various possibilities, have it be, you know, a single thing. But like, yeah, if it goes into craft services, this happens with the food. If it goes into the producer, then stuff's suit shows up. And
there was one element in the trailer that I thought was kind of interesting, how. In the bad movie as it exists in real life, supposedly the hobgoblins could have a psychic link with the their victims, and they make their wildest dreams come true.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kill you, right?
Yeah.
So that could be interesting to play that out at the table, because I feel like that would be perfect for one of those shared storytelling events, right? Where the game master sets up a scene, and the scene is framed through a series of questions that the game master asks the player, and then however that player answers those questions, that will set the scene, and now the game master is in a position where he'll need to react to that and build that scene, and now it becomes something, you know, this vignette that they play out, you know, to see how that investigation or that horror goes.
I'm totally on board with that. So questions like, what is it that your parents never gave you that you wanted?
Right. Yep.
And then you play out that scene and you corrupt it in some way.
How did you acquire a scar in childhood?
Yeah. Right. And it's but are we going to use the wildest dreams thing? Like it's an aspirational.
Yeah, that could be part of it too. What is your wildest dream?
Yeah.
How does that affect your occupation or whatever? You know, I'm just kind of thinking of that right off the top of my head. But yeah, have a series of questions that could be crafted into the scenario as hints for the game master to use whenever an individual, because it probably would work best if they're alone, but whenever there's an individual or maybe a pair of PCs together in a scene where they're going to have an encounter with the the aliens, you begin by having this series of questions, and the results of that become the reality, because these aliens are distorting the reality.
Yeah.
You know, just like they're able to distort the physical objects around them to turn them into vehicles that they can run around in and interact with the indigenous population, humans on this planet, right?
Yeah, and using the existing sanity system works really well for keeping track of how well, like, a character would be sucked into the illusion.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The worse the loss, the more that they'll buy into it, and harder to get out.
And the more they're able to, the penalty for buying into it more, you know, the more that you've been sucked into it, is it becomes more lethal as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So the stakes increase. And so the key, some kind of element, right? That'd be very 80s movie, something that glows inside of a box. What if it had a side effect for humans that wasn't deadly, but it had a side effect that, so it's kind of a sacrifice to be able to open it and handle it and use it against the creature to suppress it.
Hmm. Right.
Memory loss or loss of identity or,
you know, it connects you with a, Yeffian mind that knows what to do with these things.
Oh, make the Yeffian the
bounty hunter that can deal with it or something equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's also a little bit of a Critters vibe going on there.
Totally.
Which, you know, I'm always for more Krites.
Krites? Is that short for Critter?
No, that's the name of the species in the Critters movies.
Oh, correction. Okay.
That's the actual name of them. They're Krites.
I didn't know that. Okay, I've been schooled.
So that's all I've got on it.
We want to hear from the listeners. We have a lot of different ways for you to reach out to us.
For the complete list, check out our show notes. That's where you'll find our email address, which is mup.feedback@gmail.com, as well as the phone number, SpeakPipe link, and our forums.
Send us your questions, feedback, and topic ideas, or join a discussion. Record a liner, tell us who you are, and give us a hearty go pods for our home team, the Fightin' Cephalopods.
Find all the links you need to keep in touch at mu-podcast.com/151.
Thanks for joining us for another episode. Class is dismissed.
The Call of Cthulhu role-playing game is property of Chaosium, Inc. The written works of H.P. Lovecraft are held in the United States public domain. All other works mentioned in this podcast are the property of their respective owners. Original content of this show is copyright of the Miskatonic University Podcast under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike license.
This booger goes out to John, Chad, and Murph, who died during the recording of episode 151 when I played the bell too loud.